MacCast, Sunday, May 24th, 2020. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to another MacCast, another week, another MacCast, more Apple and Mac news to discuss, also tips and tricks and feedback to get into. Should be a pretty good episode this week. We have a few things to get into. Apple has some new style for your Apple Watch. It looks like HomePods are getting a little more scarce, and we'll talk about what that means. Apple doing some deals, some more deals on Apple TV Plus content. A few things happening with Apple TV Plus. Seems to be an area where Apple is actually doing a lot of development. Things are changing, obviously, and they're looking at their next season, and we'll talk about what's going on there. Also, Apple Glasses. We're getting some news and information about that, and they may be coming sooner than you think, or at least sooner than I thought. So we'll get into that. And then something's going on with headphones and the iPhone 12. And that'll kind of round out the Apple news for this week. Then we're going to get into some tips and tricks. I have feedback from you on my 16-inch MacBook Pro. Also, a little tip for those of you who might have a USB-C powered Mac. Also, we'll talk about podcasts and something that's going on in the podcast industry that I'm a little bit worried about and Apple might be participating in. So I'll let you know my thoughts and opinions on that. I have a number of iPhone tips that I learned recently to share with you, and they came from an unlikely source, so we'll talk about that as well. And then finally, we'll wrap up with our second round of iPad board games with our friend Dan Patrice. He's got some recommendations for those of you who are maybe a little bit more into tabletop gaming, maybe a little bit more advanced when it comes to your games, or you're just looking for something that is more involved, a little bit deeper gameplay and those sorts of things. And that will round out this episode of the MacCast. So let's not waste any time. Let's just dive right in. New Apple Watch Pride bands are out. Apple released two new Pride Edition Apple Watch sport bands this week. Actually, one sport band, and more specifically, one Nike sport band. They're available in the 40mm and 44mm sizes. The sport band is a rainbow design that kind of goes all the way around the band, parallel to the band edges. Reminds me very much of the original Apple logo, that rainbow color. And also, the Nike version, the Nike sport band version, is a white band with various rainbow coloring inside those distinctive Nike sport band holes. And it looks really nice. I really like the look of that one. Both versions are available now for $49 US. You can order them. And Apple also released new matching Pride watch faces in watchOS with the 6.2.5 update that came out this week. So you can match your band to your Apple Watch face. And it all looks pretty cool, pretty neat. I may end up with that rainbow design. I know it's for Pride Week, but again, also being the Apple fan, it's very much an Apple classic kind of band. So I'm eyeballing one of those. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but don't be surprised if I actually do. HomePods seem to be getting a little more scarce, and they are also being discounted in a few areas, and that is often a sign of updates maybe close on the horizon. Yeah, it's a little bit speculative, but here's what's going on. Best Buy this week is offering the HomePod on sale for about $99 off the regular price, US $199.99 for Memorial Day sale. And that is a pretty good savings. Also, we heard that Apple, they used to have a limit on the number of HomePods employees could buy at a 50% off price. The limit of 2, they have now raised that to 10, according to Bloomberg. And again, these are all signs that Apple's looking to kind of clear out the existing stock of HomePods, maybe, to make room for some new ones. I also noted this last week, we talked about it a little bit, that HomePods appeared to be sold out on Apple's website, although they are now back in stock. So sellouts on Apple's website is also kind of an early indication that Apple might be looking to do some updates. And of course, what we've been hearing about quite a bit and talking about here on the MacCast is the possibility of a new, smaller, and maybe lower priced version of the HomePod that could be coming this year. It is expected that the new model would come also with improvements to Siri functionality. That's something that Apple's smart speaker is often criticized for, not having enough Siri functionality. You know, I am a big fan of the HomePod. I love mine. I use it almost every day. I have it in my office, although I will tell you, I use it almost exclusively for music playback. So occasionally, I guess I do have some HomeKit compatible lighting in my office, so I do turn the lights off and on with it. But beyond that, most of the time, I'm using it for music. I am considering a second HomePod, though, maybe for a more central area of our house, the living room, because I do have a number of HomeKit-enabled devices, and it would be nice to be able to control things from there. Also, just ask more general Siri questions. But I don't find myself using the Siri functionality all that often. But I don't know if that's necessarily a limit of the HomePod, or more just my limit of not thinking to use it to ask for things, maybe add notes, add reminders, set timers, all the things that Siri is really good for. It is thought that the smaller version of the HomePod could reduce the number of tweeters in the device down from 7 to just 2. That would be one of those cost-saving measures. I think we had also heard possibly that there might be fewer mics in the microphone array, all to bring that cost down. I do think that that $199 price, $200 price, is a sweet spot for the HomePod. The new lower-priced model, it'd be nice to see them getting in that $99 range. So we'll have to wait and see if Apple does release a new HomePod, if they continue maybe the existing model at a lower, say, $200 price, and then have that even smaller version of the HomePod coming in at, say, $99 or $149. So you kind of have a range of HomePod options when you're going in to make a purchase. As Apple matures their products, that seems to be something that they will often do. So we'll have to see if that happens this year, and we'll have to see if these kind of discounts and sellouts are an early indication that we're getting a HomePod update soon. Apple may be looking to get more docuseries content on their Apple TV Plus service. This is according to Deadline. They say that Apple has spent seven figures on a straight-to-series order for an untitled four-part docuseries from the directors of the popular HBO series McMillions. The new untitled docuseries tells the, quote, unbelievable true story of one of the largest scams in government history, and that's about all we know about it at this point, beyond the fact that, according to the report, bidding was highly competitive for the new series, and it does appear that Apple did win out on this one. I caught the HBO series McMillions. I think they made that available to everyone, and I thought it was excellent. I'm kind of into documentaries, so I thought that was well done. I am going to look forward to seeing what this new series coming to Apple TV Plus is all about. So that's some exciting news there. Not sure if Apple's trying to hedge their bets now in light of some of their season 2 shows being delayed by the pandemic, or if they're just trying to be a little bit more competitive. But we also heard this week from Bloomberg that Apple is maybe looking to purchase older movies and TV shows for their Apple TV Plus streaming service. This was something that Tim Cook, even in the last quarterly results call, seemed to indicate that Apple wasn't really interested in doing, although now we're hearing reports that they're talking to studios. The claim is that Apple has taken pitches from studios for back catalog content and that they've even bought some shows and movies, although there are not really any details on specifically which studios they've been talking to or what properties they might have picked up. The report does mention that so far, none of the content is from blockbusters or huge franchises. So I'm not really sure what to read into that, if that just means that maybe they're older TV shows or stuff that's not really current. Obviously, not being blockbusters, maybe they're more indie films at this point and something like that. And maybe talks are still ongoing with some of the bigger studios. Everything's getting kind of divided up, though, and siloed out. So Apple might just be having a hard time doing deals. The story also claims that Apple will remain focused on their own original content, but they're now recognizing the need for other content and shows that can sort of anchor viewers to their service. Bloomberg this report does note that while 10 million people have reportedly signed up for Apple TV's Plus service, by February, only about half seem to be actively using the service. And this is something we've been talking about here on the MacCast, right? They have some really great shows on Apple TV Plus, but they're just not getting that buzz. And while a lot of people seem to be taking advantage of that free year offer, they're just not coming to the platform to watch things, and they're definitely not sticking around when they do. And we've heard that from our community as well. Many of you wrote in to say, yeah, you know, Apple TV, I've tried TV Plus, I've tried a few of the shows, but it really just hasn't piqued my interest, and I'm probably not, after my first year, going to renew. And I think long-term, this could potentially be a problem for Apple. In the news and reporting that I'm seeing, though, they seem to be taking that seriously and really looking into ways to expand the service. So gaining some back catalog content is probably not a bad move at this point. Although I have to tell you, for a lot of the services that I use, it's not the thing that makes me stick around. You know, when I'm looking on Amazon Now or on Netflix, I'm enjoying a lot more the original content than the back catalog stuff. Although I guess when you're trying to fill in, that's when that back catalog becomes a little bit more important. So Apple having some of that, I think, is a good move. It will help bolster up the service. Other things that are going to help bolster up the service, though, are going to be massive, huge, big blockbuster exclusives, and it looks like they have one of those coming as well. A new Tom Hanks movie was set to release in theaters in June and is now going to premiere on Apple TV+. The movie's called Greyhound, and it is a World War II drama written by Hanks, who is also starring in the film. It was going to be released by Sony Pictures in June around Father's Day, but with the pandemic, they shopped it around for streaming release, and it looks like Apple was the one to win out and pick it up. According to the report by Deadline, it is believed that Apple paid as much as $70 million to get the rights to release the film on Apple TV+. The report also claims that Apple secured the streaming rights for the film for 15 years. So this one's kind of a big one. Apple hasn't announced a release date yet, but it is expected to be soon. I might imagine that they could stick to that original release date, I think was June 19th, rather, again, just a few days before Father's Day. So that would be cool. It does look like a great film. I took a look at the trailer, and it basically reminds me of those old World War II dramas, because there's a focus on U-boats and submarines, and the whole premise is kind of trying to get troops across the Atlantic Ocean to fight in World War II. So looks to be a big epic drama, and the kind of thing that Apple could get a lot of press and buzz for, especially if it's exclusively released on Apple TV+. And they're going to need more of that kind of exclusive content, I think, to drive consumers to the platform. Apple this week also announced a new short-form sports docuseries called Greatness Code that will launch on Apple TV Plus in July, on July 10th specifically. The series will consist of 7 mini-episodes featuring athletes like LeBron James, Tom Brady, Shaun White, and Usain Bolt. And it's focusing on a pivotal moment that defined that athlete's career. In case you missed it, the new Mythic Quest Quarantine episode came out this week, and I would recommend that you check it out. I thought it was great, very timely, and there was some interesting reports this week on how that whole episode came about. When they pitched it to Apple, the series co-creators didn't think that Apple would be very interested, but it turned out they absolutely loved the idea, so much in fact that apparently they shipped iPhones and equipment to the actors and staff the same afternoon that they pitched the idea. The episode was shot on 40 iPhones and with 20 sets of AirPods. Apple actually is so happy with the results of the episode that they plan reportedly to submit it for Emmy nomination. And the episode focuses on the staff of the fictional game studio struggling to work remotely during the pandemic. There's lots of great, I think, uniquely funny moments, and also a wonderfully done and very poignant and heartfelt moment that actually surprised me a little bit. I thought the whole thing was really good, and if you haven't had a chance to check it out, it is up and available on Apple TV's Plus service right now. Another thing that they did in the story was donate money to charity. So they raised money, and that turned out to be something the cast and crew did in real life. They got together, raised $300,000, and then that amount was matched by star and co-creator Rob McElhenney and his wife, Caitlin Olson, matching with another $300,000. So they donated $600,000, with the money going to NGO Mercy Corps. Are you ready for Apple glasses? According to leaker John Prosser, he says he's seen Apple glasses, actually called Apple Glass, and he claims to know what it is and what it isn't. He talked about the new Apple Glass on his YouTube show. Most surprising, I think, is the price tag. He claims it is just $499 US. Now, you would think they would be much more expensive, but that price tag is because they're going to be dependent upon your iPhone to do a lot of the heavy lifting. Another thing that is not included in that $499 price is prescription lenses. Yes, you will be able to get a set of Apple glasses with, or Apple Glass rather, with prescription lenses for an additional cost. Frames have been rumored to look like standard frames, being sleek and not overly bulky like many of the smart glasses that we have seen in the past. Prosser also mentioned recently the possibility of a few different designs for Apple Glass, including what he said would be a high-end, and by high-end, think gold Apple Watch level, version called the Steve Jobs Heritage Edition, which would reportedly look like Steve Jobs' famous and iconic round glasses. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman calls the Steve Jobs Heritage Edition rumor pure fiction, and I tend to side with him. I don't think Apple is going to do that kind of thing, but, you know, given the fact that I probably would have said they wouldn't do a gold Apple Watch for $15,000 either, take that with a grain of salt. Now, Prosser claims the prototypes that he saw were plastic, but notes that the material could likely change for release, even possibly being metal. He also said the design he saw, the prototype, looks very similar to the classic Ray-Ban Wayfarer design that is a style that Tim Cook is known to wear. Apple Glass would be a set of augmented reality, mixed reality glasses, and apparently you will be able to get images displayed in each of the lenses, including, I believe, different images in each lens. Only the wearer can actually see the images, and they are not visible to others. So when someone's looking at you, they're not going to be able to tell that you are actually looking at a display. They will, as I mentioned, be an iPhone accessory, just like Apple Watch was when it was first released, with the iPhone processing and relaying the data and information to the Apple Glass. The Apple Glass itself will not have a camera, but will have a LiDAR sensor in the frame. Not having a camera is supposedly something that Apple is doing mainly for privacy reasons. No word on whether or not they've considered actually putting a camera, video camera, or otherwise into Apple Glass, or if it might be a future enhancement or future feature. The user interface is reportedly codenamed Starboard, and the user interface can, according to Prosser, be controlled either with gestures made on the frame or in front of the glasses. So it might actually have some gesture detection just with your hands, which is pretty cool. The glass will charge wirelessly using an included charging stand, and he says the glasses actually sit upside down with the lenses pointing up and the frames kind of laying on the table. Apple Glass will also use scan proprietary QR codes, something that was recently spotted in recent builds of iOS 14. Prosser also believes that Apple intends Apple Glass to be a one more thing style announcement at possibly the fall iPhone event, though that is already possibly being pushed back to, say, October, and he does note that the Apple Glass announcement could also be pushed to another event sometime in early 2021, depending upon how development goes. Even if the announcement happens in 2020 or early 2021, it's not expected that the product will actually ship until late 2021 or early 2022. So what do you think about the idea of Apple doing augmented mixed reality glasses? Is it going to be another kind of weird experiment like Google Glass? I think this is a little bit different, especially not having a camera in there, I think is a big first step to making people a little bit more comfortable with the technology. The idea of having an augmented reality display that can kind of enhance and relay information to me as I'm walking around, I absolutely love. I wish it would have a camera in it that could do facial recognition, though, because a killer feature to me would be being able to recognize people that I have in, say, my photos with facial recognition and connect that to people I have in my contacts to display their name to me, because I'm terrible. Really terrible, and anybody who's met me probably knows this, at remembering people's names. I can not put faces to names, and if I could have an enhancement in my glasses to help me do that, that would be awesome. I'm sure there's a bunch of other great, really neat applications that Apple has planned. I really think the success of the glasses is going to come down to how they are integrated, and we know that Apple is classically pretty good at that. We also know that Apple has been really good recently at making wearables that people really love. Apple Watch has been a huge success for the company, as has AirPods, and this would be a natural next extension of all of that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Apple will put together, and I'd love to hear what you think about it. Shoot me some feedback, send me an email or audio comment to maccast@gmail.com. And then finally in the news for this week, when you get your shiny new iPhone 12 or your iPhone 12 Pro, there may be something missing from the box. Ming-Chi Kuo thinks that Apple might not include any Lightning earpods in the box with this year's iPhone 12s. He thinks the move is being made by Apple to help drive more sales of AirPods. The expectation is that Apple could heavily discount AirPods around the release of the iPhone 12 and just in time for the holidays. By not including headphones in the box, consumers would be more likely to add on a new set of AirPods, or at least that's what Apple thinks. Apple currently sells EarPods as a standalone product for $29 US, but maybe they could bring that price down. Maybe $19.99 might be more appropriate if they're not going to be including them in the box. Also, if you want to get a base model set of AirPods right now. The price is $159 US, which is a little bit pricey. So there is some speculation that Apple would discount that, or that Apple might offer some sort of iPhone AirPods bundle at release, although to me that seems unlikely. It's not something Apple historically has done. I could see them doing some sort of discount or promotional pricing, but kind of bundling the two together for an additional cost, that might be a little bit of a slap in the face and a little bit more of a stretch. We had heard in the past that Apple might be looking at including a set of AirPods instead of EarPods into the iPhone 12 box. That would be amazing, although at the time I thought that was a little bit of a stretch as well. So it does seem more likely that Ming-Chi Kuo is on point here, that this might be the first year that we see an iPhone, and I think this would be the first time that we see an iPhone that doesn't have some kind of set of headphones in the box. I think it also is a sign that Apple really is trying to drive consumers more toward wireless options, and that eventually they might want to get rid of a connector or port on the iPhone altogether. So not including a set of Lightning headphones is just one more step in that direction. A lot of people have been speculating or asking me also, do I think the iPhone 12 will have a Lightning port or a USB-C port? I think this year Apple is going to stick with Lightning, even though it seems like they've added USB-C to the iPad, so why wouldn't they go that route on the iPhone? And I think it's the same reason that I mentioned with the headphones. I think that ultimately, Apple wants to get rid of ports altogether on the iPhone, and so therefore there's no reason really to move to USB-C because they're just going to eventually phase out Lightning and have no connector at all. So what do you think about that? What do you think about Apple not including headphones in this year's iPhone? Is that a big mistake? Is that going to upset consumers? Also, what do you think about the idea that Apple might not move to USB-C and could eventually just get rid of any kind of physical connector on the iPhone completely? I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. Shoot me some emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. But with that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of our show sponsors, and that is Smile. We love Smile here at the MacCast. They have been longtime supporters of the show, and I want to talk to you about PDF Pen, an application that I literally can't live without. It's on every one of my Macs. It's on every one of my iOS devices, and that's because PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro are your ultimate tool for viewing and editing PDFs on the Mac and on iOS. And you can do all kinds of cool things with PDF Pen. I use it often for doing forms and adding signatures, but you can also do things like add headers and footers to your documents. You can add watermarks if you need to protect your documents. You can also use their precision editing tools to fully edit and annotate your PDFs. You get OCR scanning of your PDF documents so you can make them searchable. You can also edit content in table cells. And now they have PDF Pen 12. They're constantly improving the program, and it is adding all kinds of new useful features and functionality, including the ability to optimize your PDFs to make them smaller, have smaller file sizes, customize the image compression settings. They now have built-in support for DocuSign, so you can digitally sign your PDFs. There's a magnifier window that allows you to magnify any part of the document independently from the document's zoom level. And PDF Pen supports macOS Catalina, along with iPhone and iPad support for iOS 13 and Apple Pencil support. And what's really cool about Smile and their products is it doesn't just end with selling you the product itself. They want to help you learn how to use and better use their products, and so they're constantly adding information and help and training to their website. You should check out PDF Pen and PDF Pro on the Smile website because it is a great resource. They have tons of great how-tos and information, tips and tricks for beginners, as well as seasoned veterans. I go there to learn new stuff all the time. If you want to learn more about PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro, or you just want to learn how to use your PDF Pen or PDF Pen Pro better, check out smilesoftware.com/podcast. That's smilesoftware.com/podcast. And a huge thank you to Smile for their support of the show. On the last episode of the MacCast, I revealed to you that I finally bit the bullet. I couldn't hold out any longer, and I upgraded my 2015 15-inch MacBook Pro to a new 2019 16-inch MacBook Pro model. And so now I am the proud owner of a Mac with a touch bar. And I really am kind of trying to figure out exactly what to do with that touch bar. I'm not using it quite frequently yet. It's a kind of a new interface paradigm for me, and I'm getting used to having it. It's really cool to look down and see the screen and see all the interesting little buttons on it. As a matter of fact, right now, as I'm recording the podcast, I can see the level, and I've got some enhancements for doing stuff in GarageBand, but I'm really not using that stuff. So I asked you to write in with your tips and tricks, and I want to thank everybody who's been sending those in to me. I've received quite a few. Another thing that I mentioned on the show was that I wasn't really sure how to get to or access things like the function key. And of course, many of you wrote in to tell me that it's pretty simple. You just tap the FN key on your keyboard, and lo and behold, by default, you will get the standard function key rows, which makes total sense, but I just hadn't tried it by the time I had recorded the new podcast. Honestly, I had only had the new machine for a few days. Several of you also wrote in to point out that you can customize the functionality of the function bar pretty easily through the settings, specifically the keyboard settings. You can go in there and you can choose a bunch of different kinds of layouts and functionality for the touch bar. You can choose to let the application control it. You can choose to have an expanded control strip, something that I also mentioned that I kind of missed having the physical up-down keys for the volume. Of course, you can just tap the little mini dock and then tap the volume icon and then just slide back and forth, and that will adjust the volume. So you can kind of still do it all in one motion, but I just felt it was a little bit weird, and I just thought it was much easier to do the kind of tapping thing. So several of you pointed out that when you expand the little dock there, the mini dock, that you can tap the volume keys and you get full access to kind of all the buttons to move things up and down. And I appreciate you sending in those tips. But the biggest one is you can go in and you can kind of change which layouts and which controls that you have in the different states, meaning kind of the default state and then also the state when you press the function key. So the default is the main user interface is set to application. That's where you get the little mini control bar. And then when you tap the FN key or press and hold the function key, rather, that's when you get the standard function keys. Like I said, the additional options are application, expanded control strip, function keys, quick actions, or spaces. After I received your tips, I did try out the expanded control strip, which kind of makes the control strip work like it did on my old Mac. Unfortunately, though, that replaces the application option, which then means that in my individual applications, I don't get all of the customized controls. Of course, I could move the expanded control strip to the function key, but then I would lose the function keys. So it's a little bit tricky because you really only have the two options that you can control. I kind of wish I had three different function touch bars that I could have, but that's not really an option at this point. So I'm going to stick with kind of the default configuration where application is the default and then the function keys are on the FN key. But again, thanks to everybody who sent in their tips and tricks. Keep them coming. I want to keep hearing from you. If you have some cool ways to use the function bar, let us know about it, maccast@gmail.com. I also received a little tip from another listener about USB-C power and something that maybe some of us might run into when we're using a USB-C powered Mac. And I guess it's not, is it really USB-C powered? It's, you know, power through the USB-C connector is kind of what we're talking about. But listener Eric sent in this comment and tip.
Hi, Adam. This is Eric from Silicon Valley. I had a problem with my new 16-inch MacBook Pro that I thought might interest your listeners. One of my USB-C ports failed. It would no longer accept charge from the power cable nor power up an external bus-powered disk drive. This was the upper right port and the one I typically use to power my Mac. I was getting ready to call Apple and log a repair ticket for warranty purposes when I rebooted my Mac, since I knew that was going to be the first thing they would ask me to do. Thankfully, this fixed my problem. I wasn't expecting a reboot to affect power delivery, but with the bidirectional power capabilities of these USB-C ports, I shouldn't have been surprised, since I'm sure there is more complex circuitry and perhaps even software negotiating the power direction. A possible contributing factor is that I was using a third-party MagSafe-style adapter on that USB port made by ISKey. I really miss Apple's MagSafe adapter, and I hoped this third-party device would be a good replacement. It seemed to work fine, but its magnets didn't hold the power cord in place as well as Apple's, and it often popped off or even made several intermittent contacts as I moved my laptop around. As a professional electrical engineer, I know that fluctuating power connections can be a challenge, and perhaps the fast ons and offs of the power got the USB port into some funky state it couldn't recover from. As usual, we all thank you for your years of dedication to the MacCast community. Bye now.
Hey, Eric, thank you for sending that information in. Yeah, I would imagine that is something that could be a little bit tricky, right? That whole bidirectional thing. And like you said, if you have kind of an adapter, especially a third-party one, that maybe isn't controlling or regulating that power all that well, especially if it's kind of disconnecting and reconnecting, if it's a little fiddly kind of connection, I could see that software kind of getting freaked out a little bit and sort of messing up its state. So, you know, always a simple reboot is that very first step that we all should all take when we're having any kind of issue, and that is a great troubleshooting tip just in general. But interesting that, you know, that might be something that affects USB-C. I know that some people also are struggling with USB-C docks. I had mentioned that I am looking into getting myself possibly a Thunderbolt 3 docking station and was looking for recommendations from the community. I had one person write in and say he had experienced some issues with the OWC one, which was unfortunate for me to hear, because the OWC Thunderbolt 3 dock is one of the models that I would consider getting. Now, he said that the issue he was having was when it would be plugged in and the machine would go to sleep, it was actually drawing power from the Mac rather than charging it. So he'd go to wake it from sleep and it would be drained down. He said he contacted OWC support and they told him that it was because the 16-inch MacBook Pro requires 96 watts of power versus 85, which seemed a little bit odd to me. Also odd to him, because he mentioned that when the machine is plugged in and not asleep, it does charge the Mac. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. I was curious to find out from the community if there's others of you out there that have the OWC Thunderbolt 3 dock and have experienced the same issue. I might also reach out to the folks at OWC to ask them a little bit more about it, because it does just seem a little bit odd to me. But there have been these reports of kind of weird power issues with the 16-inch MacBook Pro. We did talk about this on the last episode of the MacCast as well, the fact that you want to charge from the right-hand side if you're plugging in accessories to the MacBook Pro itself, because there are reports of some performance issues and heating issues if you've got other devices plugged in and you're doing charging at the same time. Apparently, if you put the charging cord on the left-hand side, it can kind of heat up the Mac, and then the Mac's own protection mechanisms will kick in, taking processor cycles or slowing down, throttling the CPU to kind of help the machine cool back down. So it does sound like there's a few little power design issues that maybe Apple needs to work through with these models, and it's interesting to hear these reports from others in the community kind of experiencing some of these power problems. I'm hoping I'm not going to run into those myself, but if I do, all this information is really helpful. So if you have anything like that that you've been experiencing with your USB-C powered Macs, let us know about it, maccast@gmail.com. But another one of those questions that I did get a lot this week, because I did mention I was looking into Thunderbolt docks, was which ones am I considering? Of course, the OWC Thunderbolt 3 dock, and also I've been seeing really pretty good reviews for the CalDigit TS3 Plus, and I'll have links to both of those in the show notes at maccast.com. The only thing that I noticed is a bummer, and I already kind of mentioned it, is that I don't see any Thunderbolt 3 docks that really support the higher charging requirements of the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Most of them max out at about 85 watts, which I think was the previous model's power supply. The 16-inch MacBook Pro has a 96-watt power supply, and I know that Thunderbolt 3 USB-C can provide up to 100 watts, so I haven't really found a dock that is doing the full 100 watts to allow it to charge at full rate. Now, that doesn't really matter too much, because 85 watts should be plenty to power the Mac. It's just going to be a little bit slower in charging up, but it really shouldn't be an issue. So I don't see that as a deal breaker, but it just is interesting that we haven't seen kind of docks updated to support really the new 16-inch power requirements. So if you have any advice, tips, and tricks for me, or you have recommendations on docking stations, send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. Another thing that I need to make a correction on from the last episode of the MacCast is we had a listener write in and say that he wasn't really interested in Apple TV Plus. We've been talking about Apple TV Plus, and I've been kind of touting its praises. I think there's some great shows and content on there. He just wrote in to say, you know what, not really interested, so I decided to start up my free subscription and then immediately cancel them. He mentioned that that meant that he didn't have access to Apple TV Plus, and I thought that was a little bit odd, and thought that, hey, maybe like Apple Music, it would continue the subscription until your renewal date. So you just cancel it, but you would still have access to the content. Turns out that's not true, and listener Doug wrote in to tell me about my mistake. He also pointed me to Apple's terms and conditions for Apple TV Plus, and it does clearly state if you cancel your free trial, it will end immediately and you will lose all access to the service. And as a matter of fact, you can't get back in on the free trial. You can't reactivate it. You can't even get in on another free trial when you buy a new Apple product, because it's one per Apple ID. I guess you could if you formed a new Apple ID, but that's a whole big hassle in and of itself. So the moral of the story is, if you want to or think in that first free year that you're ever going to want to watch content on Apple TV Plus, do not cancel your subscription. Let it run all the way out. If you're worried about forgetting and the membership renewing without you really wanting it to renew, my advice to you would be the day that you set it up, add a reminder into your calendar for a couple weeks before your renewal date so you can make sure to go in and cancel that subscription. And I do want to say shame on Apple for doing it this way, because this is the kind of tactic where it feels like what they're really hoping is you're going to forget to cancel that subscription and they can then automatically charge you at least one or two renewals. It's just kind of a seedy way to do subscription services, and I would have thought Apple would have been a little bit better than that. Like I said, they do this differently with the music free trial, so I don't know why Apple TV Plus is this way, other than to maybe trick people into getting some extra charges that they really don't want, and I don't think that's a really great thing. You know what else I don't think is a really great thing? Siloing open content like podcasts. As a veteran podcaster, I'm actually troubled by some recent moves in the podcasting world to lock up or exclusify Is that exclusify, I think is the word I want to use. I think that's a real word, or I just made it up. Exclusify content. This is happening by large players like Spotify and now possibly Apple, making moves to make podcast content, quote unquote, exclusive. And in my mind, if you make it exclusive, it's not a podcast anymore. This kind of started with Spotify buying or acquiring Gimlet Media, which is a company that made a lot of really great podcasts, podcasts like Startup and Reply All. When they made the acquisition, they vowed that existing shows from Gimlet Media would not change their distribution, but they didn't really comment on any of the new shows. So far, I think all of it is still available on all of the podcast services, not just Spotify, but there is a new show from the creators of Reply All that they released recently, and they are taking a tactic where they're releasing the latest episodes earlier on Spotify, and then they come later everywhere else. Just a few days, so not a big deal, but it is kind of one more baby step in that direction. And then this last week, Spotify announced that they acquired the Joe Rogan Show, the biggest podcast out there in terms of listenership, and it will be exclusive now to Spotify. Again, if it's exclusive to one platform, it is not a podcast, period. At that point, it's just a show on Spotify, and that's fine, but I hope they're not going to continue to call it a podcast, because in my mind, a podcast is about having an RSS feed that distributes that content, and that RSS feed would be, in theory, available to any player. Now, I want to make the clarification, that doesn't mean that the podcast has to be quote-unquote free or ad-supported or whatever. I think you can apply whatever monetization model you want to that show, including having it behind a paywall. It's more about the ability to grab that content and be able to use any sort of podcast player or anything that can read an RSS feed to consume media content and be able to listen to it how you want to listen to it. It's about the freedom to be able to consume that without being locked into a single platform like Spotify or Apple Music or Apple's podcast app or any podcast app. You know, I don't care what it is, Stitcher, radio, you know, radio, whatever, doesn't matter. The point is it needs to be open enough where I can pick how I want, how, when, and where I want to consume that content. That's what it's all about. It's meant to be free in that way. Not free monetarily, but free in terms of choice. And, you know, maybe it's just because I'm an old school podcaster, but podcasts were originally created to kind of counter what was going on with big media and radio and all that control. It's to open up the platform for distribution, not close them up, not silo them, not lock them into a certain place. And what's worrying me now is that Apple seems to be threatened by Spotify. You know, Apple had kind of owned the podcasting world in a way, and even that wasn't really good, right? They kind of control promotion and things like that. That's a whole kind of separate topic we could talk about. And I really welcomed Spotify coming into the podcasting world because I think it helps open that up and give more options and choices to podcasters and podcast listeners. But now they're kind of wanting to control the content, and Apple is moving in that same direction. They feel threatened by what Spotify is doing, and they're wanting to possibly get into the exclusive podcast game, at least according to some recent reports. Apple is said to be seeking a leader for its original podcast work right now, and in Apple's case, what we're hearing is they're looking for ways to possibly drive interest in Apple TV Plus shows, and possibly one way to do that is to build podcasts, exclusive podcasts that are around that content. So an example is apparently there's going to be an Apple podcast for the show Little America that dives deeper into each one of the episodes and kind of supports that episode. It's also being reported that Apple's looking to find stories and podcasts where they might be able to take those podcasts and turn them into original content for Apple TV Plus shows. So sort of go the other direction. And Apple is funding original, is going to reportedly fund original content shows, original podcasts for Apple Podcast exclusives that will then tie into their series and stuff like that. But again, it's that word exclusive that I'm worried about and kind of frustrates me a little bit. It should not be exclusive to one platform. And I really don't like seeing podcasting moving in that direction. It starts to feel like we're going to wind up like streaming services where, hey, if I want this podcast, I have to go to this service. If I want that podcast, I have to go to that service. And we shouldn't even call them podcasts anymore. We should just call them shows. I kind of wish podcasts were just called shows in general. I think it's a better term, right? This is a show that you listen to. You can listen to it wherever you want. And that's great. You know, I think that is the right way. And so, I don't know. I wanted to talk about this a little bit because it was in the news this week. It was kind of a big deal, and it's something that impacts all of us, you as podcast listeners, me as a podcast content creator, and it worries me about where the industry is going. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. If you want to shoot me some feedback or send me an email, audio comments are really welcome as well, mattcast@gmail.com. Now let's talk about something a little bit more fun, iPhone tips. I love learning new tips and tricks on my iPhone. What was interesting this week is the source of some tips is one that I didn't expect to get information from. I saw this over on The Loop. I think it was written up by Sean King over there. And what it was is there is someone on TikTok, a content creator named Jessica Wang, and she started doing TikToks with iPhone tips, and they turned out to be very, very popular, and she had some good ones that I wasn't even aware of. One of the first ones that she posted was a little trick where you can lock out with a passcode any application on your iPhone. And she mentioned using this to kind of keep her kids out of her Photos app when she didn't want them in there. And the way this works is something you can do with screen time is you can set a screen time passcode. And that will control access to kind of some of the screen time controls, including the lockout settings. So you can go into screen time, add a screen time passcode, a separate passcode from the one that unlocks your phone. And then what you can do is you can add a limit on any of the apps that you want to protect, say your Photos app or maybe your Messages app. Set the timeout limit for that app to 1 minute so that after a minute it locks access to that app completely. And then because you have the screen time passcode, in order to bypass that lock, you would have to enter the passcode to undo it and get access to that app. And you can give yourself access to the app for another 24-hour period or an hour, something like that. And so this is a really cool way to just lock an app if you don't want somebody to be able to get in there. And I never would have thought to use screen time in that way. So that was a really cool tip. Another really cool one is to use the globe or the emoji key to shift the keyboard in Messages in case you want to do some one-handed typing. So what you can do is you can tap and hold on the little globe or the keyboard icon, the emoji icon, and then it'll pop up a little menu, and you can notice that you can push the keyboard over to the left side of the screen or to the right side of the screen on your iPhone to make one-handed typing a little bit easier. So that's a cool tip. Another really cool one that I was unaware of, but apparently my family was aware of and didn't bother to share with me, is setting a quick timer from the Control Center. So if you have in your Control Center the timer app, you can tap and hold on the timer icon in Control Center and then slide up and down like a little dimmer slider to quickly set a timer at various intervals. And what's really cool about this is it works from the lock screen if you have it set up so that you can use Control Center from the lock screen. So you can set a timer all without having to unlock your phone. Of course, you can always use Siri to set a timer, but this is a way to do it physically from the button and do it really quickly. swipe to multi-select messages and mail. What I mean by this is if you've ever wanted to select a number of items in messages or a number of items in mail to maybe bulk delete or take a bulk action on those, you know you can go into the app and tap the select button, and then you can kind of check off in the row view all the little items. Did you know that you could two-finger tap on that to enter that mode, though, and then two-finger swipe down across all of the items in the list to multi-select them in a series really quickly? Yeah, I had no idea that that was a gesture that you could use in messages and mail. I don't know if it works in some other apps, but it definitely works in those two apps. Another really cool feature of Notes these days is that you can scan documents, and there is a quick way to access document scanning from the Notes app. If you just tap and hold on the Notes icon, you can choose Scan Document, and then you can scan in pages or multiple pages, and then tap Done, and those will save those into your note. And then if you want to share those off in some other way, you can tap on that document in the Note app and then tap on the Share button to save that out as a PDF, say to the Files application, or send it via email or text, or maybe just AirDrop it to someone. So if you need to quickly scan documents on the go and you just want to use the built-in Notes app, that is a quick way to do that. And then the last tip that she had, I think I knew about this one, but I often forgot about it, and that's about moving groups of applications together when you're trying to move them around on the home screen. Maybe we talked about this on the MacCast way, way long time ago, but have you ever wanted to, like, you know, move your apps around the screen and you end up doing the whole jiggle thing and you're kind of moving one app at a time? What if you want to move a whole group of them together? Well, you actually can do that. What you do is you tap and hold on the icon till you get it into the jiggle mode, and then you can drag that one icon, keep your finger on it, and then tap other icons on the screen, and what will happen, so tap them with your other finger, what will happen is those will slide under that first icon. So it'll kind of group them all together, and then you can move them all as a single group wherever you want, and when you drop them, they will go into that position. So you can move a bunch from one screen to another, you can move a bunch from one folder to another, and it is really handy. And what's really cool about learning this technique is this technique can also be used in the Files application to drag and drop multiple files. So you can use the same technique in a couple different locations on iOS. So there's a bunch of cool little iOS iPhone tips for you. If you have some of these of your own that you think are a little more obscure or maybe people don't really know about, please send those in. Share them with our community, maccast@gmail.com. All right, we're going to wrap things up today with another session on iPad board games with our friend Dan Patrice. He came on last time and told us about some great board games that you can play multiplayer. This all started with a question from a listener, John, who knew I was a big fan of tabletop games, and he was asking if there were some iPad versions that he could play with his friends and family as they're remote and doing social distancing and all that stuff. And I didn't really know which ones were really great for multiplayer. So I reached out to my friend Dan, who is a board game aficionado. He is actually way more into it than I am, and he actually does some podcasts about it, and asked him, hey, can you give me some lists? And he came back with three different lists. Last week, we did kind of the casual starter games. This week, we're going to dive into some of the little more advanced, a little more involved games. So here was Dan and some games that are maybe for those of you who are a little more seasoned with tabletop gaming. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Hey, yeah. So last time we were talking board games and we were talking about stuff you could play on your iPad with friends and family as you're kind of remote. We got into kind of more of the starter, casual, easier to learn kind of games. Mm-hmm. I think This time we're going to dive into the stuff for the more advanced folks. Maybe they're already kind of heavier board gamers, maybe looking for something new to try out, or just one of their old favorites that they want to play. So what do you got for us this week?
So all of these games are very good, and they all have pretty good AIs to play. So if you're kind of a heavier gamer that just likes to knock out some of these games quicker, you can do that as well. Or these are very good to play with other people, and you can play them, if you have a child that's cross country, living somewhere else, or just a friend that you want to play with. So number five, I'm kind of cheating here. This is almost like six because I have two, but they're both Uwe Rosenberg games. There's La Harve and Agricola, both excellent games, a little on the heavier side, but excellent, good heavyweight games, and the implementation is top-notch. So number four I've got, so this is another one where it's interesting because it's been out on Steam for a long time, but it just came out on iOS, I think a few months now, maybe from January. Terraforming Mars, which is one of my favorite games, is now out on iOS. It can be a little buggy. So I kind of moved this down on the list. They're really working out some of the kinks on the multiplayer. But for what we're going to do here, like just to say either sitting across the room from somebody you're playing, or you know that somebody else is there playing and they're not going to really time out at all. Terraforming Mars is excellent. And again, a good one that you can knock out a game by yourself, and the AI is good. But it's also a really good tutorial. So that's also very, very good, especially for a heavier game. Actually, La Harve and Agricola also both have good tutorials.
And the theme on that one is like space exploration, like,
yep. So the kind of stuff. You're kind of building out Mars is from basically a blank slate, and you're kind of using tableau play and playing cards, and there's variable player powers because everybody has their own corporation, so you'll have powers, and you're kind of terraforming Mars where you're either building cities or putting oceans out there and trying to raising the temperature of Mars and also the oxygen level and things like that. It's excellent, great theme, and it actually feels like it as you're playing it as well.
Cool.
Number three is one I don't have a lot of experience with, but it comes highly recommended, and I really like the regular game, but I've heard that this is one of the best implementations, Istanbul, which is a great game on a tabletop, another Euro game, not all that heavy, but kind of heavier than kind of family or something very, very light. So this is another good one. I believe this is by AEG is the normal one. I can't remember. I'm not sure if Akram would put this one out, but a very good implementation is Istanbul.
It's Akram. Yeah, $6.99 on the App Store. So what's the 2-second synopsis on this one?
So this is kind of it's a lot of times Euro games are famous for being kind of pasted on theme, where you're just kind of you're getting stuff and turning them into points. Gotcha. So in Istanbul, you're kind of going throughout a market, and okay, you're kind of picking up different goods and then kind of leaving your friends or your workers out to do other work as you're kind of going throughout the city. And then you're picking up your workers. So it's basically all about kind of really getting your engine going and really solidifying your engine to the best amount of points you can get.
Awesome.
This is number two is going to be the heaviest game. The two and one are very heavy games, but Through the Ages is an amazing game. It has what I would refer to as one of the best tutorials you can find. I believe it's cross-platform as well, and you can play it, I believe, asynchronous, which is also a great way to play games like this, where you don't have to sit there and play it live. You can make your turn and come back. But Through the Ages is a great implementation of a heavier game that people that really like those heavy, heavy games, this kind of scratches that itch of that as well, and I highly recommend Through the Ages.
This looks like it has kind of a history sort of theme. Is it kind of play on a timeline so thing?
It's like Civilization. It's kind of, I think it used to be called, I think it was like Civilization Through the Ages, a story of civilization, things like that. So it has that real kind of Civ feel to it.
Okay, cool.
You don't really have the exploration because you're just kind of building out your tableau, but it's got all the other great X's, it's not quite 4X. It's got like kind of a 3X feel without the exploration in there. And number one, Terra Mystica, which is kind of a little bit like Through the Ages, has that same feel and there's a bunch of different fantasy races. Everybody has kind of their own real powers, and you're kind of terraforming this land and building out kind of your empire, and then kind of, moving your spaces around and having little empires here and there. But every race has its own little powers. You're really doing some cool things when you're putting you're getting abilities or getting revealed as you're building different locations. You're unlocking other powers and getting up on these different kind of god tracks. Another really good, it needs a tutorial. So that's really good because, games like this needs a tutorial, but it's an excellent tutorial. It's an amazing game, Terra Mystica.
I'm looking here and there's like about a gazillion pieces, it looks like, if you had this on the tabletop.
Oh yeah, this is a good 2 to 3 hour game on the tabletop for sure. But it's a good one. I recommend it. It's not something that's easy to get to the table, but it's a lot easier to get to the table as an app than it is as a board game, because it does take a while and it's a brain burner, but it feels good if you like that sort of game.
Well, that's probably good in this the times we're currently in. Hopefully it's coming to an end soon, but people probably have 2 or 3 hours to a game at this point.
So I have one also ran here, another one honorable mention, and only because it's new and kind of, I'm not sure if people really like that kind of legacy feel to it. There is a game by Akrum Digital that just came out. It's called Charterstone. This is by Stonemeyer Games. You play this over 12 games and the game kind of changes and you're changing the board and it's just a really, really fun game. I just didn't want to put it in there because if you're not committed to the whole 12 games, then it loses a little something. But if you've got family or friends, I'm actually playing in a game with all those of us. We're all over the country. There's 4 of us playing and we're up to game 11, and it's only, it's asynchronous, or you can everybody can be there at the same time and just get their turns in, or it's asynchronous where if I can't get, until I get home from work to do it, then you could do that too, and then it's someone else's turn.
Oh, that's cool. There are a lot of ones that are like that. So you can actually, it's like more turn-based where you can take your turn and then the next person goes and you can just wait for them and then reconnect.
Exactly. So, you can get a little, like a Twitter DM thread where you just say, oh, Adam's up. And then you're like, oh, okay, I'll be there after dinner. And then, and everybody knows. And then, the game will give you alerts as well, but it's just kind of a really cool way to keep track of each other.
Excellent. Excellent. Cool. Another great set of games. Thanks again, Dan. Real quick, you want to tell people where they can find you and the things that you're doing?
Yep. You can find me on the Geek All-Stars podcast, where I do a kind of a mostly board game centric podcast and some other geek culture. You can find me on Twitter at GeekJockBlog. And you can also find me, I do a game news show on the Munchkin Land podcast, where I do the Munchkin Minute and a top 5 board games edition on those are both on the Major Spoilers Network.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. Hey, there you go, Dan Patrice and iPad board games that you might want to check out. I'm going to have links to all of these up in the show notes at mattcast.com. So don't worry if you didn't get to write all of those down. They will be available to you. Also, remember, Dan is going to be here one more time. We're going to be talking about iPad board games that you can play either solo or with just one other person. So solo or duo iPad board games. So that'll be in the next episode of the MattCast. Something to look forward to. But for now, that is going to do it for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take one more moment to thank our show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen, also PDF Pen for iOS and Text Expander for iPad and iPhone. You can check out all of their great applications and software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MattCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MattCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at BackbeatMedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MattCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything we talked about on this or any other episode of the MattCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. You can check out the MattCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast, or find me on Instagram, just MattCast on Instagram. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.